Hello everyone, my name is Elisa Bustillos and I would like to welcome you back to another episode of Murder, She Spoke. If you're new here, we're going to be discussing the horrible acts of female serial killers around the world. I would like to introduce my special guest star, Jennifer Franco.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Who is a part of the Huntington Park High School soccer team. I would also like to introduce my wonderful two producers, Diego Medina and Judith Cruz.
Hello.
Hello.
I would also like to thank the Spartan Shield for sponsoring this episode of Murder, She Spoke. Okay, Jennifer, have you ever heard of Leonardo Cianciulli?
No, I haven't, but her name's kind of interesting.
Well, it's actually because she's Italian. She's from the Kingdom of Italy, and she was born in Montella Avellino on April 18th, 1894.
Wow.
She was known as the soap maker of Correggio. Are you curious as to why they called her that?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you. like the serial killer we mentioned before, she had a hard home life, so she was definitely like a very troubled child. She actually had attempted suicide twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in her young life, up until the point where she was like about 17. At that point, she had already tried to commit suicide many times.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, while she was still a young girl, she got married really early.
How old?
I think she was 18 or 19 when she was married. It's not official because they kind of just ran away with each other. Mm-hmm. They didn't get like an official court marriage. So she married a registry office clerk. His name was Rafael Panzarli. And her parents didn't approve of her marriage. They were like, you're too much of a young girl. We already had somebody picked out for you. It was supposed to be an arranged marriage, and she went against her parents' wishes for her. She claimed, Cianciulli claimed, that at that moment her parents had cursed her. Her mother, she accused her mother of being a witch, and that she had put a spell on her for the rest of her life. In 1921, the couple moved because they were like afraid of the curse that their mother had put on them. So they moved to Pensardi's native town, Lororio Pensensa, which is also in Italy. Mm-hmm. She was actually, when they were there, she committed fraud, like insurance fraud, and she claimed to be somebody else that she wasn't. Mm-hmm. So she ended up going to jail, and she was convinced that this was all because of her mother's curse. When she was released, she didn't want that kind of reputation, so she moved to Lacedonia.
Lacedonia,
yeah. But her continuous strain of bad luck continued after her home was destroyed in 1930 by an earthquake. They moved again, and she opened a small coffee shop where she was very popular in her neighborhood. She was very famous for her baked goods. She was very famous for everything that she would come by. Like, she was very famous for her famous coffee. She had very famous tea cakes. She sold a lot of stuff in her shop, such as soaps and teas and different kinds of herbal remedies. She had always wanted kids, and during her life, she had 17 pregnancies. 17. She was pregnant 17 times. But unfortunately, three of her children were miscarried, which means her pregnancy didn't follow through, and 10 more died in their youth.
Oh, that's so sad.
So she ended up only having four kids that lived to their adulthood, which honestly, that was probably the reason she was so overprotective. Mm-hmm. She favored her eldest son, but he ended up going into the army, which made her more, I guess you could say, like, she was very careful for him. She wanted to protect him. She didn't want him to go into the army. Her fears, the reason she had these fears, were because she had received a warning from a fortune teller. She frequented fortune tellers a lot, and she received a warning from a fortune teller that her kids were gonna die. Mm-hmm. And the fortune teller that told her that in one hand she had seen that Leonardo would live her life in a jail cell, and on the other hand she saw either that she would live in an asylum for the rest of her life.
Jeez.
She was very superstitious, and after her son joined the Italian army, she believed that that was his death sentence. She believed that he was going to die right then and there. A lot of people blame her son because of this, because this event caused her to go crazy. She believed that the only way she could save her son was through human sacrifice.
Really?
Yeah, she believed that if she sacrificed other people, God would bless her and keep her son at home and not murdered.
That's kind of crazy.
Okay, so getting into her murders. Following her first victim, Faustina Seri, she was an older woman, so she was like kind of a spinster. She spent a lot of her time alone and sad, and she was definitely easier to lure into her web. So Cianciulli played this part of a fortune teller. Cianciulli convinced Seti to tell no one that she was going to go to Pola, which is in a different part of Italy. She told her that to write letters and postcards to her friends and family and relatives to send when she arrived in Pola. But there was no suitor waiting for her. So she convinced her that there was going to be a husband. You know, there's a husband waiting for you if you move. So what you have to do is you write postcards to all your friends and family telling them you're never coming back and you're moving there.
What?
But once she got there, Cianciulli was waiting for her. And she cut her up into pieces with an axe and melted the body into a pot. Now, what she ended up doing with the body is very gruesome. She turned the body into soap and tea cakes to sell in her shop.
Oh, God.
She actually shared her recipe with the people that arrested her. She shared her recipe. She said, I threw the pieces into a pot, added 7 kilos of caustic soda, which is like baking soda, which I had bought to make soap, and stirred the mixture until the pieces dissolved in a thick, dark mush that I poured into several buckets and emptied in a nearby septic tank. As for the blood in the basin, I waited until it conjugated, dried it in the oven, ground it, and mixed it with flour, sugar, chocolate, milk, and eggs, as well as a bit of butter. Kneading all the ingredients together, I made lots of crunchy tea cakes and served them to the ladies who came to visit.
No, that's just something so gross.
Same with the soap. She used the fat in their bodies to make small little hand soaps that she would sell into her shops.
Oh, no. Did her clients know about that?
Definitely not. I'm sure if they knew, they wouldn't want to buy her tea cakes. This is one of the more well-known things about her murders, that she used baking soda, which was kind of like a caustic soda, which is an industrial solvent used to break down wood, but she used it to break down human bodies. It could also be used to mix a harsh soap if it's mixed with fat or meat from a human. In order to cake out a person, she simply let her victim's blood get dry, basically, which is kind of gross if you think about it. She had to wait for it, and she like put them in this giant tub so they could just dry out.
Oh, God.
As for her second murder, Francisco Soavi, she was enticed by the killer with the promise of a job. She enticed her with the promise of a job in Italy. So she did the same thing with her. She promised her that there was an all-girl school there that would accept her because Francisco was very poor and she didn't have any job opportunities where she was living. So she gave her very similar instructions that she gave to her first victim. She told them, tell no one about your departure, and instructed her to write postcards to her friends and family that she could send once she arrived at the school. But of course, there was no job, only a trip to Cianciulli's soap factory.
Oh, jeez.
So she would convince them to come back one last time, for their fortune to be read one last time before they left on their trips to Italy. And she would take whatever, obviously they would have luggage with them, they would have money with them for their trips. So she would also steal from them. And she would take them, she would kill them. Cianciulli's third victim, Virginia Cassicapio, kind of walked into her own murder. She was a former opera singer who at 53 was out of work and very desperate. So when Cianciulli said that she found the perfect job for an ex-opera singer working as a secretary to a mysterious theater impresario in Florence, Capisopio, she jumped at the chance. As someone who was in the opera world, you would think that she would do her research more. Yeah. You know, if she was obviously a very famous opera singer, you would think that she would know about all the famous theater people. And when she said, oh, well, I don't know his name, but I know he's very mysterious about what he does, I think she should have been as suspicious.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's not her fault that she died, obviously. But, I mean, it's sometimes you have to be... I guess it's because she was desperate. But sometimes you can't be so trusting when people offer you a job. And even if the job did seem too good to be true, Cassiopeia jumped at the chance to re-enter the opera world and was turned into a creamy soap that was given out to her neighbors. So she gave her away for free. She said, in a quote, that the opera singer was her most delicious victim. She wrote a memoir many years later in her life, and she wrote this quote. She ended up in a pot just like the other two. Her flesh was fat and white. When it had melted, I added a bottle of cologne. And after a long time on the boil, I was able to make some acceptable creamy soaps. I gave bars to the neighbors and acquaintances. The cakes, too, were better. That woman was really sweet.
Okay, that's just a no.
She kind of plays it off like she didn't really care about who she was murdering. And she was like, it kind of, those things didn't help her son, you know? Like, just because you're murdering people, like, I think she got into it too much. Yeah. And, I mean,
it just became a thing to her.
Like, just something that was... like, eh, that's fine. So, after this, her sister-in-law, actually, her husband's sister, grew very suspicious of her. The other two victims, the first two victims, they weren't as well known as the opera singer.
Mm-hmm.
So, nobody really missed them when they went. I mean, I'm sure they were missed, but a lot of people had assumed that those two ladies that were the first victims had just cut them off and they had moved to other places of Italy where they were having a better life.
Yeah.
But as for the famous opera singer, her sister-in-law grew very suspicious of her sudden disappearance. And she remembered last seeing her at Cianciulli's house. So Cassiopeia didn't follow the directions, and she did tell her sister that she was going to be seeing Cianciulli before she left. She reported her fears to the superintendent of police, Rogerio Emilia, who opened an investigation and soon arrested Cianciulli. Cianciulli did not confess to the murders until they believed that her son, Giuseppe Pansardi, was involved in the crime. So her son that she had done everything to protect,
mm-hmm.
they were suspecting him of the murders, and she didn't want to admit to them.
Wow.
So she was, like, very... she wanted to protect him even to the last minute. Yeah. So she confessed to the murders, providing detailed accounts of what she had done to save her son from any blame. Cianciulli was tried for murder by Rogelio Emilia in 1946. She remained unrepented, going so far as to correct the official account while on the stand. At her trial, Potes Leonardo gripped the witness stand rail with oddly delicate hands and calmly set the prosecutor right on certain details. Her deep-set dark eyes gleamed with a wild inner pride as she concluded, "I gave the copper ladle, which I used to skim the fat off kennels, to my country, which was so badly in need of metal during the last days of war." So to dispose of the things that she used to kill people, or the things she used to make her soaps, she would send them back to her home country. She was found guilty of her crimes and sentenced to 30 years in prison and 3 years in the criminal insane asylum. Which was crazy, because that means that the person who gave her her fortune at the beginning was correct. She did end up in the asylum. She did end up, you know, in jail for, like, the rest of her life.
Yeah.
She actually died of cerebral apoplexy in the women's criminal asylum on the 15th of October in 1970. So she lived a long time.
Yeah, she did.
A number of artifacts from the case, including the pot in which the victims were boiled, are on display at the Criminological Museum in Rome.
Oh, God.
There's actually a play about her called Love and Magic in Mama's Kitchen, which was first produced by Lena Wertmüller at the Spotello Festival in 1979. The play began a run on Broadway in 1983. So what do you think about this murder?
Honestly, I think it's kind of, like, crazy, but at the same time, like, she made it a habit to actually, like, do the murders and stuff. But...
Do you think that it was all the bad stuff that happened in her life that drove her mad? Or do you think it was her own doing?
I think it was her own doing at one point. Because it just came, like, to be a thing.
Like, it came to be a habit?
Yeah.
I can't say that it's understandable if she did it once, but I do think that if she truly did have the intentions of saving her son, she would have only done it once.
She would, yeah.
I think she definitely used that as an excuse.
Yeah, she did.
As to kill these innocent ladies who just wanted a better life.
Yeah.
And for the fact that she was evil enough
to take advantage of them.
To take advantage of them and then turn their bodies into soaps.
To soaps.
But I think she definitely would have gotten away with it and done more. What do you think?
Yeah, I would have thought the same thing, because if it wasn't for, like, the Oprah singer, then she would have not, like, been...
caught.
Caught. Yeah. But that's crazy, though. How do you... like, why would you do that?
Out of all things you could turn people into, you turn them into soaps and cakes.
Yeah.
You know, and especially that you're eating these people. She was also convicted of cannibalism. Because that's illegal.
Yeah.
But I think that's why a lot of people thought she was insane. And you could blame it on the fact that she lost her children. And you could blame it on the fact that she was protective of her sons and scared of what those gypsies and those other people told her.
Yeah.
And the fortune tellers as well. But at the same time, do what you can of the information you have, you know? She could have, like, empowered her son or, like... she could have focused on the kids she had, and instead she went to jail for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
And who knows what her son thought of her after that.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer, for joining me today. And remember to always check your tea cakes for bones. Thank you all for joining me today on this episode of Murder, She Spoke. I would also like to thank Jennifer Franco for being my guest today. Special thanks to the Spartan Shield for sponsoring this podcast. Join us next week to discuss Clementine Barnabette. And remember, always check your tea cakes for bones. Thank you.